Sticky Bird here from Chopped Tees. Our summer super sale is now on. Grab up to 25% off selected tees and hats from Post Wrestling, WrestleNomics, The Lapsed Fan, Poison Rana, and more. Shipping is free and fast almost everywhere in the world. Just go to chopped-tees.com and grab a deal before the sale ends at midnight, July 7th.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone.
But we can't ignore the math, okay? We can't ignore the data.
Go on Google Trends, type in your name, then type in mine. You're a straight line. I'm a pyramid.
I like the very direct question on that.
Television ratings, downward spiral. Buy rates plummeting.
The time is now to turn the math around.
We are live here on another edition of Pollock and Thurston. John Pollock and WrestleNomics own Brandon Thurston here with me. One day before the 4th of July, Brandon.
Yes, it's another Independence Day for now. And I will hope to avoid a fire. It'll be a very dramatic day for my dog, though, for sure.
Yeah, fireworks are a thing. They still are a thing. All these many years later, people love to blow stuff up on these holidays. WWE is celebrating.
Fireworks on Canada Day?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. We get them just at random hours of the evening. People love to just watch colorful things exploding in the sky and then the debris that ensues afterwards. Fantastic industry if you can find your way into the fireworks industry. But WWE is celebrating 4th of July by leaving, going to Canada all weekend long, where it looks to be a very profitable weekend for WWE. It looks like they're going to be okay in 2024. We've got SmackDown, Money in the Bank, and Heatwave coming to the Scotiabank Arena. So big of an event that it is going to require Brandon Thurston to pull out his passport and come to Toronto this coming Saturday.
I do have a new passport that I still have not really had to use. I have the enhanced license, of course. How many of those events are you going to be attending there in Toronto?
Money in the Bank and a maybe on Heatwave. That might be a day of decision, but I'm definitely going to be going on Saturday night. And yes, you and I will be there to cover it. We are also going to be in Toronto during the day. Brandon and I will be getting together with many of the post-wrestling WrestleNomics listeners at Wide Open, which is the bar at Richmond and Spadina, 139A Spadina Avenue. So if you are in Toronto, you can come hang out with us. Many of the post-wrestling Poison Rana crew are going to be there 2 p.m. Eastern time. It's a free event. Operative word, free. So we hope to see many of you there. All the information, postwrestling.com/live. And we hope to see many of you there. It's about a 20-minute walk or so from the Scotiabank Arena. So we'll give you plenty of time to get over. Whether you are there for the main show at 7 or the two-hour pre-show that Money in the Bank will feature at 5 o'clock.
Two-hour pre-show?
You're doing a two-hour pre-show, which typically is a wrestling-free pre-show. But if you want to see people talking in person, that might be your best opportunity. Now, off the bat, we do want to make a programming note that was kind of out of our control today. We were scheduled to be joined by Matt Camp. He is unfortunately dealing with very ill today. He is under the weather, and we will reschedule him. It was just a last-minute change, so we will keep Matt with your well wishes, and we will aim to have him on in the next week or two. But joining us today, we are going to be speaking with Josh Nason from the Wrestling Observer website. And Brandon informed me that he has a lot to say about the Sports Business Journal, which wrote a pretty lengthy piece on the WWE's increasing site fees and going to various areas of the country and securing fees from different governments. And we are going to break that article down in detail. Sports Business Journal all over TKO the past couple of days with lots of coverage.
No, they're not the only sports media outlet that's been all over TKO in the last few days as well. But I did you know, I've bought a proper license to Adobe Acrobat. I got the highlighter out, and stay tuned because on the back end of this show, we're going to break this article down.
I cannot wait. This is going to be an article breakdown from one Brandon Thurston. Forbidden Door went down this past weekend at the UBS Arena on Long Island. The final count from WrestleTix was 10,620, and Tony Khan stating that they hit 11,000 and a $1 million gate for the show, which would make Forbidden Door 3 for 3 when it comes to seven figure gates for the Forbidden Door franchise, which I would say up until the introduction of All In last year, I guess we could say the return of All In, Forbidden Door has been their most consistent show year by year thus far. And truly a concept that I guess when we see the pay-per-view number, how much it still is that much of a novelty seeing talent from various promotions. But at least from the live perspective, it seemed like this was a area of the country that it responded well in after shows in Chicago and Toronto last year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm mildly surprised that they did a $1 million gate for this show. We know that they did do a $1 million gate for Revolution, for Sting's retirement show, just based on everything, all the other directions that TV ratings and ticket sales are going in. I am mildly surprised, but they, according to Tony Khan, they did it. Pay-per-view buys, if I can read the coded Tony Khan language in the press conference, he said that he's expecting another great result based on digital buys. Of course, they do not know what their traditional pay-per-view buys are going to be because those take so long to process for whatever reason in 2024 still. But they do instantly know what their digital buys are. He's not giving any numbers, of course, but there have been a number of times where he said that, you know, he'll make some comparison to the same events with the same name of the prior year and say, oh, it's on track to do better than last year's Forbidden Door or something like that. He did not say that this time, which tells me maybe it's on track to do below what Forbidden Door did last year.
There could be a Tony Khan translator account on X that is just waiting for somebody to occupy and run, where you take Tony Khan answers and then you translate them.
Yes.
This could be your ghost account.
This is if you go into the OpenAI API and you do the get into the fine tuning mode, you could feed it all sorts of Tony Khan answers and responses, and then maybe train a chatbot for that. Yeah.
So it was a very big weekend in the state of New York, because two nights prior you had a gigantic show at Madison Square Garden with a WWE drawing over 17,000, and that would likely put this among the biggest domestic gates they've ever done for a television show. I believe Dave Meltzer had reported it was the second biggest garden gate behind WrestleMania 20 in 2004, but we don't know a number yet for this SmackDown. But as you can imagine, prices would have been scaled appropriately for the garden. And this was, they rammed as many people as they could into this venue with the reduced staging as well for Friday's episode.
We have the WrestleMania 20 gate at $2.4 million in ticket sales. So I imagine that's ultimately coming from the Observer here. I would think, I would not be surprised at all if this was a $2 million gate for Madison Square Garden, given the number of tickets that they've sold, the way that ticket prices have been going for WWE in general lately have been pretty high. So that's an expensive building to run, I've heard, that Madison Square Garden. That's why they've been so hesitant to do TV there. I would suggest, maybe the reason why, they've really favored the Barclays Center in the latter Vince McMahon years is just the notion that they weren't going to be able to sell that many tickets. And given the way they can price these tickets, the way the WWE is now and the way the popularity is now, it really, there's enough ticket demand that it's going to offset those extra costs that come with dealing with the union workers or things like that.
Yes. And spotted at that Friday show, Nick Khan was in attendance. Mm-hmm. Stephanie McMahon was in attendance. Yes. Wanted to be front row to see the downfall of Paul Heyman right there going through the table.
Roving reporter John Cena was on location getting the photographs there.
Yes. Yes. I thought I saw that photo, which I did credit John Cena with, certainly got circulated by others. Not always with credit.
Stephanie was in the front row, correct?
Stephanie was from the photo I saw, she was in the front row where she was. Yeah. I believe with her kids as well.
Was she in the front row throughout? Was she still seated in the front row when Paul Heyman was being destroyed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I never saw her on the broadcast. It's not like she was ever identified or even like seeing her in the background. But there she was. It's interesting that when you look at this weekend on paper, like if you're looking several months out and AEW was going to Long Island 2 days after a garden event. And let's remember, this would have been the night after Conor McGregor's fight on pay-per-view. Like, this could have been a very challenging event for AEW, both in the market and on pay-per-view, just following. I don't know how relevant the crossover is today, but for a Conor McGregor fight, that would be something typical you would want to avoid. But we'll see what the end result is for the pay-per-view figure. But they certainly got caught a break when Conor McGregor caught a break in his toe.
Yeah, there were no dark matches or anything after this SmackDown, right? I think the show ended and it just ended. This is a long way from the days of 1989 where WWF was like running an all-night show before Wrestle War 89, at least in one case where that happened.
Oh, right. And just keeping everyone, they did have 2 days, I guess, to catch up on their sleep if they were, decided.
No, they left the long show to AEW, of course.
Well, a man who is staying up until all hours of the night, keeping WrestlingObserver.com powered, he is Josh Nason, returning to Pollock and Thurston. Hello, Josh. Welcome back.
Hello, Josh.
Well, I am glad to be welcome back. I just literally 2 minutes ago got finished recording a podcast for Limos Wrestling, a great indie out of Portland, Maine. We just talked about Dijak returning. That's pretty exciting. And if I start talking about like Medicaid start drifting off or something like that, can you just revive me? I heard that's in these days, so you just let me know.
Do you think Tony Khan, when he informed us that he had drank 10 cups of coffee at the press conference on Sunday night, maybe that was some advice for a certain president looking for re-election?
Possibly. Yeah, that was quite a week to be alive, I guess, as they always are, right?
Yeah, I'm just watching above here north of the border. You guys do your thing this November.
That's right.
Both of us, Josh, were on the media call earlier today that Shawn Michaels held. And, you know, just you're a regular on a lot of these calls. I have to say, I think Shawn accounts himself pretty well in these. I don't think he's necessarily, you know, just opening up the playbook and giving you everything. But I feel like he's giving as much as he feels comfortable with. And there's a certain sincerity that comes across in a Shawn Michaels that I don't necessarily see in it. Even a Paul Levesque, I think that Shawn is a lot more kind of like rough around the edges, which I think makes for a more just engaging speaker on behalf of a company in that role that you don't want to be going out there and just, oh my God, what's this guy going to say? But also not packaged in such a way that you're just trying to pry anything out of him either.
Yeah, he's charming, right? I mean, we know him as this, I've known forever, for decades, as this character on TV, the guy that said I love you to Ric Flair before he delivered the super kick, same guy who appeared in that dreadful Saudi Arabia match, right, back in the day. But you know, when it comes to NXT, he's really found a home with this, and you can tell that we're so used to wrestlers lying all the time and about, you know, in interviews and news and all this stuff, but when he's talking about these talents and when he's talking about how there's this, I want to say this, just the his reverence for the process and teaching them and how they learn and bringing veterans and all this stuff. He has this, just this thing about him here. He really loves it. And you find that you hear about guys wanting to give back all the time. He's giving back, and it's not just him, but this group of people he's assembled there. You know, William Regal's there, obviously back, and just, you know, Matt Bloom and all these people that have been there forever. There's something there. You can tell it's really kind of made him whole. And he's had this life, especially his life in wrestling, where there's so much, you know, controversy. And again, the back injuries and the past with, you know, substance abuse and, or, you know, whatever his past issues. And he's come out of it, and he's giving back in a way that's going to help the business for years to come. His answer he gave to talking about Javon Evans, I mean, that really tells you all you need to know about how he feels about this group. And he loves his job. And I think, you know, he's a guy that's going to be there for a long time. The fact he has such simpatico with Triple H and their friendship, and now it's in a professional way of things, I think that, you know, that really helps. And it's good to see. And it's so much of a difference than, you know, the Tony Khan media calls and things like that. You know, two different types of things. You know, Sean's not going to get too much into the business stuff like a Tony Khan could, but there's a humbleness and a unpreparedness, so to speak, with Sean that is refreshing. It's great to see.
Was there anything particularly newsworthy coming out of this conference call, Josh?
I didn't really think so. I don't know, John, if you want, I mean, John asked about Drew Gulak and Gable Stevenson. But in terms of, you know, he's not revealing numbers or anything like that. I didn't really see anything too newsworthy. There's, you know, some talk about where the CW debut is going to be in front of fans or not, or sorry, on the road. It would be in front of fans, of course. But if that was going to go on the road, he'd say he's heard the same things. Those are ones you always wonder if he's working. He's just like, oh, I hear the same things you guys do. I maybe to some extent that's true, but
He certainly tempered his own kind of thoughts on going on the road, that this is, you know, he seemed to be pretty glowing about where they're set up in Orlando at the moment. And I wouldn't necessarily disagree that I don't think that the environment of the Performance Center is it's funny when we were first entering this Wednesday night war, that was considered a very big negative for NXT. And now it's not as much. I don't view it as the same negative anymore. And when it was brought up about running the Apex again, you know, you could hear from him as well, in the sense that if we go back there's ways that we can improve. And, you know, because I think that was a bit of a criticism for people. It was funny, Josh, because you probably, you know, follow a lot of the same people, that it seemed the people that are just watching UFC cards out of the Apex that might have seen clips, like, they were like, wow, this is spectacular compared to what we usually see. And for your WWE audience, it's like, man, this is toned down from the Performance Center. And you had like these two different audiences that were watching the same show, but having different takeaways on how the Apex came across. Because, I mean, we're talking, this show on Sunday is now at over 9,200 tickets out. WrestleTix had their last update at. So it's telling you like what the trade-off is by going to the Apex of what, you know, granted, this is piggybacking off a larger WWE event, but what the ability of NXT to do on the road can be when packaged in the right way for one of these Sunday night events.
Yeah, it's a novelty. And I think he basically said, as you were just alluding to, he said, we can't really go out on the road. You know, it just financially just not feasible. He didn't say that specifically, but he said it without saying it, that, you know, for them to go out and without, you know, they want to make sure that the venue looks good and all that stuff. It's hard because NXT is still, as despite the popularity, I don't know if it's still a touring brand. I think if it was, they'd be out there. But you look with, you know, we're talking about UFC, the fact they use the Apex so much, they're trying to reduce costs. The fact they have a WWE entity that they own that doesn't need to go out and can still make money, I think that's really attractive to them. With the, you can call these very similar to UFC pay-per-views when they go out. NXT, if they can do this six times a year, if they can maybe grow that, maybe they go to 12 times a year. I don't know if they do that, but if they can make money off it, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Brand extension.
Yes. Do we have any thoughts about what the TV ratings are going to be like when NXT moves to CW? My last thought on it was that the trade-offs of being on a high-profile cable network to being on a low-profile broadcast network are kind of offsetting, and I think we'll end up with about the same TV ratings that NXT is doing now just because of those offsetting factors. But I don't know if you guys have any different thoughts about that.
I would agree. I don't see any reason why they'd be that much different. I don't know if they're going to gain all these people that don't have, that aren't watching it now. Be interested to see how well they load up that first show to draw people in. I'm sure there's definitely going to be some main roster. I think about the Tuesday night war, so to speak, when they loaded up that show with Cody Rhodes and The Undertaker and whoever else is on that show. I assume they're going to do that to try any chance they can get a casual viewer in. That's like, this is WWE on free TV. They'll take it. I just wonder how many of those people are left. But yeah, I'm not expecting, you know, million-dollar viewers or anything like that. I don't see any reason why it'd be that much different. Maybe a slight uptick, but I think the water will find its level, and that's a pretty good level for them to be at.
Just for some idea of what CW is doing on Tuesday nights in primetime right now, it's a 0.05, something called Hostage Rescue doing a 0.08. I mean, that's like half, maybe sometimes a third of what NXT is doing on the USA Network.
Does that say The Quiz with Balls under it?
It's on Fox, yeah. That's what it says.
The Quiz Never with Balls.
It. I mean, the $1,000 pyramid, this is the stuff that they'll be up against. Just the Game Show Central here. Beat Shazam, Password. Wow, what a lineup. This tells you how out of touch I am with television and what's happening here.
Well, the fact you just said the $1,000 pyramid instead of it, that'd be a pretty cheap pyramid to be on mainstream TV.
Well, it's an interesting question about just moving it to CW and how much I'm with you, Josh. I think you're going to see that big first week push that they always have, which I always think is kind of an interesting strategy they always go with, because then it's the follow-up week that you have kind of like you come back down to earth and kind of setting your expectations at such a huge level of, you know, loading up that first show. But I think also the key is having something to kick off a big angle, something to come back with week two as well. And this is going to be in close proximity where they're going to have to be, you know, training everybody on SmackDown moving to USA at the same time. And then we're going to see the ultimate promotional push for January with Netflix.
Yeah. With CW, I you know, you keep hearing so much about how younger they skew, right? So you might see the sex appeal kind of amped up a little bit, maybe not to a completely obvious degree, but I'm going to guess that they're going to get a little thirsty, so to speak, to maybe try to track some people in. We'll see. I don't know. They've talked about this in calls before. So it's like, is there going to be more like allusions to angles taking place over like phones and things like, you know, it's kind of like that's how conflicts start and so on and so forth. So I'm wondering outside that first one, how much they really lean into like
chat drama. That's going to be like shooting an angle for a match.
Exactly. TikTok drama. Yeah. Things like that. So yeah. So it's not probably not MySpace drama. I'm going to guess maybe a little bit too dated, but yeah, I'm really interested to see how ridiculous they get with it, because they've had some wild shows on CW in terms of, but stuff seems to hit, you know, and I would assume they're going to try to get to do some weird stuff with it. So we'll see.
So last week, Tony Khan gave the our latest analogy that we have. We're going to go to the football analogy that they have entered the red zone. So as we are ticking down, Josh, do you sort of have it in your mind, do you believe this is going to be sealed imminently? Do you see this being played out for any length of time? And let's go with, we are into July now. Like, they very well could be out of this exclusive negotiating window with WBD.
Well, I know that Tony Khan is hoping that this deal will not be a big fumble for AEW. There's another football reference there. Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. So basically, you know, as you look at the calendar, you know, we're talking here on Wednesday, July 3rd, and this window is going to be up at any point now, which a lot of people assume is this month. Secretive date. It could be up right now. We don't know. So it really comes down to how confident, and Tony Khan has obviously talked confidently about thinking that he's going to get a robust deal for these rights. He's thrown in, you know, Ring of Honor's name in there as well. So we're going to get a chance to see how, you would think if he feels that strongly about it, and he thinks that the offer from WBD is like, it's good, but maybe he's like, I kind of want to see what else is out there, that he would go forth with that and say, okay, we're going to go up to open market. Or is that a little bit of public hedging? And behind the scenes, he's kind of like, well, the Netflix is cut off. Peacock is cut off. And all these other ones, the options for streaming aren't as strong. Maybe Max is probably good to go after all. Maybe we can see where we're at in another 5 years. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. So many people putting so much into the results of this deal. So I like that. That's a nice graphic. I like that. I try not to be prone to hyperbole, but it really is important for so many reasons. And putting aside all the negative chatter that will be on social media, regardless of what happens, this is really important. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know the social. Yeah. You hear that? Yeah, negative chatter every once in a while. We'll have to see. This is so fast. I find this more fascinating than WWE Raw TV rights when they were going up for me. Cause it's just, we're at this point of a startup where it's like, they can go this way or this way. It's not going to go extinct like so many people are thinking, but it's, there's so many misinformed people are thinking, but it's really fascinating. It's going to tell us a lot, and we're going to get our answers, you know, within a few months, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like we got some clarity about when the current deal expires. When Tony Khan appeared on Fox Business on television last week, he was introduced. In the course of him being introduced, the anchor said that the deal's expiring December 31st. So Tony Khan didn't correct her, although with how close to the vest he is with details, who knows if he really would have. But that's what I believe, is that the current deal with WBD expires at the end of the year. The exclusive negotiating window, we've been getting all sorts of, I don't know, I would say vibes reports about when it actually expires. I would think, 6 months makes sense in terms of it being a nice round number to the notion that you're giving this content provider, AEW, 6 months to shop on the open market before expiration. Or maybe it's like, if you look at when the final broadcast would be towards the end of the year, I think Saturday, I think the 28th is a Saturday or something like that. So maybe that's the last collision broadcast under the deal. And you could go 6 months back from that, and you could get to a point where we would be in the exclusive, we would be at the end, out of the exclusive negotiating window at this point now. And then we have a conversation about who are the bidders that could even potentially be interested in these properties. And that could be, the only two that really jump out as plausible to me would be Fox and Amazon. Go ahead.
If you think about it this way too, like there's not a lot of time, right? And so, and I talk about time in terms of offers, second meetings, a decision to be made. And then from there, look how long of a runway Netflix has for Raw to when they start. And there's all this stuff that's happened behind the scenes, infrastructure wise, obviously, but also with, promotion, right? How are we rolling this out? When are we rolling this out? Media buys, all these type of things, branding, how do you introduce this to a new audience? There's all these aspects that have to take place. You could compress them in a short amount of time, but I'm going to think you're going to need, I would think that a decision one way or another has to be made by Labor Day at the latest, right? Because that leaves you 4 months to then say, okay, we either stick it around, which is the easy thing to do, and then there may be some new bells and whistles, streaming service, all that stuff you can kind of lead up to. But then if you're going to say a Fox, or if you're splitting up things, you have 4 months to educate and 4 months to have those partners be ready to go. If they're going to look to sell ad inventory, all these type of things, there's so many other factors involved that, the less time there is, the more time you would think that the incumbent is going to win. But if Tony Khan really wants to get out there and do this and see, you don't get too many of these options all the time. And I imagine it's going to be part of him was like, this is my chance to really see what this is worth to other people outside our universe. And how many times, like any type of sports free agent, how many times you're going to get that opportunity at this point? They may be stronger in another 5 years. They may be weaker. It's so hard to say, but there has to be a temptation to be like, what else is out there? So you don't look back and regret and say, what if I just had those meetings? Unless WB is like, is it a take or leave it offer? I can't imagine that's the case. But, there was a report the other day that their UFC thinks that Dana White said that they might be interested in their rights, as is everyone kicking the tires. So they may pivot completely. There's so many questions for this, but time, even though it's a long time between now and December 31st, there really isn't when it comes to TV.
Yeah, my belief on why a deal hasn't been done yet is that, and I think I was told months ago when there were rumors about, incorrect rumors that AEW might not be renewed, was that the reason why there's not a deal yet is because they're negotiating, and just WBD, and it's sort of self-evident, WBD hasn't made a strong enough offer to make AEW take the deal. And I guess they're going to go look at other players in terms of some of this content. Now, I'd be really shocked if AEW went away from WBD completely. And all of this adds up with what we've seen from WBD publicly in terms of being very stingy when it comes to the NBA, and Gunnar Weidenfeld's their CFO talking about cost discipline. And, they have a lot of debt that they're dealing with as well. So it's not that surprising on the other hand, that they might be, sort of playing hardball with AEW in terms of how much money they're willing to spend.
Mm. You mentioned the UFC rights, and that's going to take up so much more of the overall attention of, sports media outlets. Are you looking at this as a deal that's really going to transform UFC? Like, it's feels like it is being regarded as everyone. Like, this is the next big set of rights that are up with everything else, like, tied up. Are you looking at this as the UFC really graduating to be, like, maybe right below your big four sports?
I don't think it's going to seismically change the UFC other than they're going to make a ton of money. And that's going to be good for TKO's bottom line and so on and so forth. I think we've seen so many changes. And John, you've known this from covering the sport so long, and I've been covering since like 05. It is night and day almost compared to what we used to see with the, from the sponsors to the mat, to entrances, to the amount of shows. And that's really, you know, the big thing is just UFC has so much tonnage and has an upward mobility to add more. And that's the thing that Mark Shapiro has talked about before, is talk about adding more UFC shows. To us, that seems like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? There's like 44, 45 shows, I think, a year already in total. To add more to that just seems crazy. That's in addition to the Contender Series and Ultimate Fighter and so on and so forth. But they're, you know, they're a content company now. They're not a fight company. And Dana White has said that before. As far as transformational, I think it's just going to give them a lot more money if they spread it around. I think they'll probably try to keep it all in one house. I don't see them going to like the NBA model or WWE model where they're maybe going to split up stuff. But they said they're going to be very flexible, so I could be wrong on that. The interesting thing is the pay-per-view rights. Are they ready? And they don't. You know, none of us see these numbers anymore. But how much is it worth to ESPN? And we heard Mark Shapiro mention in a recent call that he was talking about how if ESPN, they're going to roll out this standalone service outside ESPN or outside ESPN Plus or whatever the call of it is, where it's ESPN and people can get it over the top. He was like, and he just threw out there, I'm sure it was no mistake, like, what if they bought out the pay-per-view rights and use that to justify a higher cost rate or higher rate to get this new service? You can charge $25-$30, but you get every single UFC pay-per-view tied into it. I think that's going to be really fascinating to watch. But, you know, other than maybe opening up a couple of performance centers around the world and such, I mean, they've got this thing so well running now. And the fans, I mean, fans are packing in arenas for fights and main events that would be like, third or fourth up on the prelims 5 or 6 years ago. And people are, you know, they're raking it in. It's incredible. Watch, they have this Apex in their back pocket. It's a fascinating time to see how much they've risen when I think their star power has gone down over time, but the brand has gone up. And that's a Vince McMahon thing. That's a Dana White thing. Brand above everyone, because that gives you leverage when your stars want more money. I mean, look at the whole Conor McGregor thing, right? You guys were just talking about that a few minutes ago. There's no pressure to get Conor McGregor fight right away, right? If that fight doesn't happen this year, it's not going to make a difference to UFC. And that's crazy to me, but that's the way it is now.
Look at this past Saturday, like, to lose Conor McGregor and they still maintained a $16 million gate for like, and the ability to be able to swap out a Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler, and on that notice, be able to get their light heavyweight champion to fight on last minute notice, to flip a fight literally the day of with Dan Ige coming in. I mean, it's like the audience is perfectly willing to just, you know, trust the process, trust the brand, and still show up even when you lose such a marquee attraction. That, yeah, if Conor is going to fight again, we're going to get another great gate. But we just scored our biggest gate of the year this past Saturday and lost our main event.
Yeah, they have got the UFC fans that are on the team, and that's similar to what we see a lot with WWE fans. AW fans, we're on the team. We like paying more. We want the companies to say highest gates because we're part of that. We're paying more for this. It's crazy how we're in this spot now, but that's kind of where things are. Things just change so much. We were talking the other day. My wife and I were talking about something like, you know, a couple of years from now, our daughter's going to be X years old. It's like, think about what happened 2 years ago, 3 years ago. How much things change. Everything is moving so fast now in the media landscape. Due to finances and it's affecting sports, and what we know today is going to be so different 5 years from now. It's not funny. It's like, it's incredible how things are moving so quick.
Well, Josh, we want to thank you very much for stopping by and looking ahead to the future, figuring out where all these things are going to land. It's going to be a very newsworthy second half of 2024. My last thing to you after 6 months, what are the big news stories thus far of the first half of 2024 that come to mind when I say?
Let's see. That's a great question. I think the now I'm trying to think in my head, what happened during this year? Did it happen this year or last year? The WWE rights, clearly. I think the fact that storyline wise, I think the fact that this bloodline thing has kept going is crazy. The Rock returning and being such a difference maker, extraordinaire. Like there should be a different term for how, what he brought to WrestleMania. The fact that Cody Rhodes is about to be joined by Roman Reigns as another, huge baby face. And like I heard mentioned, may have been maybe you guys, or maybe Dave or Brian or someone's like, it's Austin Rock. And you said, think about like, oh yeah, yeah. And then you think about like, it is very much Austin Rock. If when Reigns comes back and he's in a hot storyline that doesn't involve Cody at all. And that is like, yeah, WWE's white hot streak that they can do go wrong. I think that's up there. I think, obviously the AEW media rights and their struggle with this curve of putting on great events. Forbidden Door this past weekend. Excellent events when it comes to in-ring, $1 million gates, great pay-per-view buys and all that. But the TV ratings have kind of been, you know, up and down, and certainly, you know, not awful, but they've had their dips. But that the attendance just is not there, and it's not like up to the right. And that is still like a super surprising thing, despite all these people being brought in. WWE media rights and so on. It's wild.
What happens 2 days after the Netflix deal was announced?
2 days at what date was that?
January 25th.
The big lawsuit is filed, Josh.
Oh, the Vince thing, right? Is that? Oh, the Janelle Grant lawsuit. I didn't even brought that up here. Yeah, because it hasn't been a lot on it lately. The fact that just came.
You
so
like
far
the rest
down,
of the rest of the media world trying to ignore it.
I know, which is why shows like yours are so great, because you won't let us forget it, which is good.
But when you go back to the fact that WWE, that you've listed off all that stuff, like they have not skipped a beat, and they have done as effective a job as you can state in terms of distancing themselves from that, even though they are defendants in the case. Like I think the average person has very much separated Vince McMahon from WWE.
Vince is gone.
It's like that was the problem. It's all contained to him and John Laurinaitis, and WWE, they were able to separate themselves from that story and have done it.
This
like
is all of Olivek era.
That's it. It's the new era.
It's because Vince is off the team, right? He's off the team. You're on with us. We're saying goodbye to him. We're moving on, and we're going to keep continuing to give you great stuff. We're going to go to your country. We're going to go here and here, and people are going to go crazy. It's wild. It's absolutely wild. And I keep thinking, like, you know, how are they going to deal with any type of a downturn? I don't see one coming. I mean, I don't know what public gaffe they could make.
This is the natural state of the business when there's not Vince McMahon in charge of creative, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for them. I mean, it's absolutely wild. And of course, you know, press conferences, right? Media calls. That's a big story as well. Questions not being answered. Questions are being answered.
Were you
like
on the AEW media call, Josh?
The one last week? Yes.
Yes, he was. I heard from him during the call.
Yeah, I was. I got more out of, and this is a shameless plug, I got more out of Dave and Brian's talk with Tony than I did that whole media call. And they actually cracked the code on how to interview Tony Khan. I know you guys have talked to him before.
Tell me how.
Do the Dave Meltzer steamroll approach, right? Mm. You're just talking.
Talk over.
You can see Tony was trying to get in here, and then Dave was just like, wait, just one. And John, you know, is from listening for decades, right? Like, there's a Dave style, and Brian was really great too. There's certain things that, you know,
these are like the two monster trucks going at one another. Yes,
exactly. And Tony respects Dave and Brian enough to know, like, I can't get out of this with doing a 20-minute soliloquy on the Forbidden Door card that all these listeners know. They know the card array. They want to hear about the other stuff as well. So I thought these guys did a really good job. Way more interesting than that media call was. I thought that was one of the more boring ones in terms of news, and just like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't need to hear match by match previews. The reason the media's on the call is we've written all these freaking previews for months and months and months, and we're going to do more. We got it all. Like, give us the other stuff that we don't get by, you know, the inability to talk once a week, so to speak. You know, those are, that to me, calls like, what's the most interesting stuff? Most interesting stuff is not like tell me about, you know, Toni Storm versus Mina Shirakawa. It's just like, you've seen the TV and all the previews. Like, what else do you need to know? So,
and Toni doesn't do that many interviews. It's been a long time since he did an interview with Dave. He did a few of them, but it'd been, I want to say, years since he had done one. Why do you think he was willing to do one now?
I don't know if it was just persistence, timing. There's, you know, his, I don't know directly. I know that his availability seemed to fit well sometimes with Dave and Brian's sleep schedules, like super late at night. And I think that I think since he was on the East Coast, he probably did the interview at like 3 a.m., like his time, which would be like, you know, midnight Dave and Brian's time when they're usually doing Wrestling Observer Radio. I'm sure it's just, you know, schedules and things like that. And maybe, you know, part of it too also is that, you know, Dave is, as much as people think that, like, the stupidest thing, you know, Dave's gets paid by Tony Khan and all this stuff. Any positive thing, it's like, oh, it's always paid, right? Is that Dave, Tony knows that he can't, Dave will press him on certain things. And he's, if there's something he may not want to tell him, and he knows he's going to get asked, you know, it's easier to avoid an interview rather than try to do a answer that's going to make you look bad. So yeah, I think there's, and he knew he was going to get asked about the TV right stuff. And I think he was able to talk around that as much as he could, being direct, but yeah, I don't know. I think it was just a timing thing and maybe a subject matter thing or anything like that. But I thought those guys did a really good job with that. Again, a shameless plug for WrestlingObserver.com. And again, the blueprint is there if you want to get real answers out of Tony Khan.
Well, some of my favorite media calls are the quarterly AEW investors calls Josh Nation hosts with a recurring guest in Brandon Thurston. When are we going to get the Q2 call?
Well, we got to talk about that. It's going to be hopefully at some point this month. Brandon, I'll slide in your DMs, as the kids say, and talk about that. But I hope to do some Josh Nason's Punch Out podcast over the next few weeks and leading up to that. And need some people to return some calls, you know, or some DMs and emails, people I've been reaching out to. So we'll see about that. But yeah, you can check that, of course, on WrestlingObserver.com and all the news. I write news and stuff like that. The great staff over there, Joe Currier, Ethan, Brian Rose, Ian Carey, and the rest of the bunch, all of our great TV writers do a lot of great coverage. And a lot of space for people to check out different opinions and news in the email in the wrestling space. And great sites like WrestleNomics, of course, Post Wrestling. Of course, you know, Randy Savage there on the front there. For some reason, it's tagged Wrestling Observer Radio. I guess we'll have to fix that because it's Brian Vinny's show. But that's Brian Alvarez for you when he's posting stuff at 4 in the morning. So we'll fix all that. But yeah, it's been great to be here. As always, I could talk for another hour if you guys have time. I mean, it's up to you.
And Josh, you always come through in the clutch, and that's why we had to put out the bat signal today, and you came to save us. So we thank you very much, and we'll definitely have you back on soon. Thanks as always. All
right. See you guys. Thank you.
See ya.
Okay, there he is, Josh Nason. As we count down, do you think? Because Brandon, I keep thinking in my mind of like when we are like booking guests of how in advance we book a guest, because I know that we're gonna get. I feel like these TV rights for AEW are gonna get announced on like a Wednesday at noon or something like that. It's going to happen one of these Wednesdays. Are you foreseeing the news coming this month, I will say, of July?
That's possible. I mean, I tend to think that we're either in the exclusive negotiating window now or we're days away. So it's possible that it gets done pretty soon after the negotiating window opens, right? I think that's kind of what happened in 2018 with WWE. They let SmackDown go outside of the exclusive negotiating window, and I think within days or weeks there was a deal with Fox announced. It could be.
Should we be watching out for the NBA rights to be formalized and announced? Do you think that that's going to influence when this deal is completed? Because Adam Silver has said as much that, you know, once the finals were over, like, they want to wrap this up. I don't think they like to have the uncertainty out there. And here they have a whole nother season to go. But I would imagine those rights to be finalized pretty soon.
Yeah. I mean, if that gets done soon, then I would be even more anticipating an AEW deal being done. But I don't know. I don't know what's happening with the NBA deal and if that's going to. They have a whole year. Like, they're still under their current deal. They still have next season to do under that current deal before they go into the new deal, whatever that is. So they could go into next season before they have a deal done. And who knows what's going to happen in terms of if there's going to be any kind of lawsuit or something like that involving WBD and NBA or what's going to happen there.
I'm gonna go to a question in the chat here that's been asked for Brandon that we're gonna throw out from I'm not gonna try and pronounce that name with due respect. He asks if this is to Brandon, if Netflix chooses Raw, why not OTTs like Amazon Prime going after AEW? Do you see any options that we're not maybe thinking about in terms of streaming options that have? Do they just want to go all in on professional wrestling, or do you expect there to be a primarily a linear component with maybe, you know, something adjusted for streaming?
I think I could see one of the shows going to Amazon Prime Video, probably not Dynamite. There's a big difference between Netflix and everybody else in the streaming space, because Netflix is in something like 60 million homes in the United States. That's pretty close to what a cable network is coverage is at this point. So we're almost at the point where, you know, Netflix has as much coverage as the best cable network. And Netflix has probably much younger viewership. Amazon has a lot of coverage in a sense, because everybody, there's something like probably 80 million subscribers to Amazon Prime Video, but not the same percentage of people actually using Amazon Prime Video. If you look at the Nielsen gauge that Nielsen publishes every week or every month, you'll see that the consumption is, like, in terms of streaming, it's YouTube, it's Netflix, and then there's sort of everybody else. And even though Amazon Prime Video is available in so many homes, it's not being used to the same extent. So I think it'd be a good option for, like, Collision or Rampage, maybe even pay-per-view rights or something like that. But it wouldn't be as big of a deal or as big of a value of a reach value as Netflix is to whoever, to WB or to whoever is on Netflix. But I could see some rights going there. I don't necessarily think that's likely, but it would make some sense. And I would see, you know, I think it's possible too that you could see Dynamite and I guess all of their whatever's on cable also being potentially simulcast on Max or something like that in a new deal, which would, of course, create all sorts of complications and problems for reporting on the ratings. But, you know, that's for me to deal with, I guess. And another ratings thought. Today is July 3rd. It's not July 4th. But I have a feeling that that Dynamite rating might not be too good tonight, because of the holiday.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been affected by just being on a neighboring day of July 4th. Not just, I think AEW was last year, maybe, and other wrestling programs have been have done really low ratings even when just neighboring this holiday.
Yeah, they are. Tony Khan is really hyping up tonight's show. He is he's going into a Twitter hype mode for tonight. They do have a very strong lineup, but I was thinking that myself about on the eve of the holiday, if that's going to have some kind of impact on the show. We will see. We're going to shift focus.
Get a rating on, I would guess, Friday. I would imagine there's going to be a delay with Nielsen, but I don't know for sure.
Let's focus on this Sports Business Journal article. They actually put out a series of pieces earlier this week, but the main one focusing on the WWE's ever-increasing site fees and looking at various fees that they are getting for the upcoming SummerSlam card in Cleveland, next year's WrestleMania in Las Vegas, and also looking back at the Rumble from this past January in Florida, and at least getting some figures in mind and the specific organizations that they've been working on. And I know, Brandon, you had a lot of thoughts on this article by David Broughton.
Yes, I think we could talk about this from a lot of different angles. But the headline is Cities Make a Run at Hosting WWE Events and the Tourism Dollars They Bring.
No cliche, no pun in there.
No wrestling
move. I mean, already I'm giving them some points right off the bat. Cities delivering SmackDown to the highest bidder of some sort. The city body slams WWE into submission. None of that.
City puts government funding in total submission. WWE's evolving strategy of making its jewel events shine brighter and longer, that's an M dash, is paying dividends for the company and the cities that host them, according to multiple stakeholders interviewed by Sports Business Journal, is the leadoff sentence there. Just high-level thoughts on this before we get going into excruciating detail on this article. What were your main takeaways of this?
I would state that this was overall, I think, this felt as though this was a piece to kind of put WWE out there in terms of attaching these figures and what it means, and getting, you know, several on the record comments from people at these, you know, various organizations that are bidding on these shows. But, you know, this is much as this kind of felt like a flyer for these WWE shows to make them look like these are very enticing events for these cities, and look at the fan base that is willing to travel. Like, there's a stat in here that they're going off of last year's SummerSlam in Detroit that, they listed the attendance around 55,000, stating 60% came from outside of the market. Like, this reads very, very complimentary to WWE and in line with what they have been stating about this being such a big area of growth for them.
Yeah, I guess I want to mention here that we're familiar with so many discussions around wrestling media and how wrestling media doesn't do a good job, which it often doesn't, it seems to be built in, have the built-in premise that if wrestling media did a better job, the industry would be so much better off. I guess we're going to talk about this on Saturday, and that's maybe true to an extent. But what the media outlets and the media coverage that really matters to the wrestling industry, to WWE and AEW, are articles like this, because who's their audience? It's not the people listening to this podcast. It's sponsors and other business partners that read Sports Business Journal. And that's the intended audience. And that's why this coverage matters. And I would say that there is some journalism here. There are some facts in here that are uncovered that I did not know about, but this article is kind of a combination of journalism, of public relations, and a little bit of plagiarism too. So I guess we'll just go through some of these stats that they have here. Average nights stayed for each of these WrestleMania events, and they put the number for Orlando in 2017 at 6 nights, which they do talk about a little bit later in the article. And maybe it's just the notion of Orlando being obviously this big tourism city, because there's Disney World and lots of other attractions.
Well, these are fans as well. They're going to progress. They're going to evolve. I think in 2017 they're going
but not in 2018 when the average room nights were only 4 in New Orleans.
Well, then we started to see the contraction of some of these independent shows. I guess 2017 was just that was when, you know, all these events were it is a stretch on some of these to imagine 6 nights, because at this point they're doing like WWE specific events. We are still doing SmackDown. Has SmackDown even moved to Fridays by 2017? It's on Tuesdays, isn't it? I don't think it's even in the market for WrestleMania in 2017, if I recall.
Not on Fridays, no. No,
it's on Tuesdays.
Live on Tuesdays, yeah, until October 2019, yeah.
So you are doing Hall of Fame, TakeOver, WrestleMania, one night of WrestleMania, and Raw, and I believe SmackDown was in another market entirely, if I'm not mistaken. But at most, it's you're looking Friday to Tuesday.
So at least it is listed here that the source for the data that's in this table is CoStar, which is not Polestar, but CoStar, which looks like some kind of business-to-business data provider for hotel hospitality information. And WWE is one of the sources here, as well as something SBJ Research, whatever that means. It's noted in here that Raw and SmackDown and UFC Fight Nights this year have began to receive fees from cities that want to bring those properties to town, basically saying that this year, It's already begun what Mark Shapiro talked about, wanting to get Raw and SmackDown site fees. Now, we know that UFC Fight Night got a site fee recently, correct?
They got a site fee in
St. Louis.
Utah, Houston. There have been now some of those are pay-per-views, but they have been getting, you know, several in various cities in the U.S.
Okay. Well, have Raw and SmackDown gotten site fees? I don't know. Maybe they've been packaged together. Like, we know that there was the Honda Center Anaheim.
The Honda Center one comes to mind. The recent one they just did in Louisville, Kentucky was a back-to-back UFC SmackDown
combo. So maybe
combo.
In being packaged with UFC events, maybe that's happened. Okay. A source, while not disclosing specific deal points, said the deal includes the largest, this is talking about the Indiana multi-PLE deal that we talked about, I believe it was last week. A source, while not disclosing specific deal points, said the deal includes the largest site fee ever for both Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. who could possibly even know that if not somebody inside WWE? I don't think the sports commissioner executives, the sports commission executives they talked to for this article would know what all of WWE site fees are to compare them to one another to know which one is the greatest. So that's what's a site fee, I think, is a little bit ambiguous because incentives are so often mixed in with these deals. In the case of the two WrestleManias that took place in the Arlington-Dallas area in 2016 and 2022, we know that those deals were, we're going to have some disagreements later on in this article about what the 2022 site fee was. But okay, the 2016 deal was something like $3 million, mostly in incentives, though, mostly in reimbursements. $350,000 was the actual cash transacted here. So I think the 2022 WrestleMania was something like $9 million in incentives. And again, only $350,000 in cash. So is that what we're talking about here? I don't know. We think that maybe Las Vegas was $5 million or something like that. So, okay. Anyway, so we'll keep that in mind for future reference, I suppose. There are quotes here via email from Paul Levesque. So just, I think it indicates just how important articles like these are. How often do we see Paul Levesque give quotes for written articles?
Let me just do a Rolodex of all the wrestling sites.
Has he ever given you a comment for a story?
No. But I guess Paul Levesque deemed Sports Business Journal a credible outlet for such a quote.
Yes.
As long as they identify him as Paul Triple H Levesque.
Yes. So anyway, he said that this is one of our goals, and he really credited W's president Nick Khan and the company's live event teams for accomplishing all that they're doing with live events in terms of getting site fees and things like that. So there's some information here about WrestleMania this year in Philadelphia. This article lists that the attendance is 145,298. Which is the official attendance that was announced on the broadcast and mentioned in press releases. But clearly this article has access to the documents, which it says were filed with the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission, which tells you what the total number of tickets distributed were for each night, which comes to about 60,000 each night. So 60,000 plus 60,000, according to my inside sources, are 120,000, which is a little bit less than 145,000. Okay. So they do list the gates here, which are the gates minus the ticket fees that we have and that we reported weeks earlier from public records requests from the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. So that is there. And they do have some information here about the highest price ticket sold. There's no sourcing here, of course, but they do have a $10,000 ticket was the highest price ticket sold for WrestleMania night one and night two, 8 and 9 respectively on Saturday or on Sunday and Saturday. So somebody paid 10 grand, 8 people paid 10 grand. And 9 people paid 10 grand on Sunday and Saturday, respectively, for WrestleMania 40.
Brandon and I did not.
That was not us. That was not us. that experience was immensely valuable, but maybe not $10,000.
So again, they're going with the legit gate figures, but the yes. inflated.
Well, there are
figures.
No WWE self-released gate figures. There is a 78% right. delta from the prior year, but we don't know. I don't know. Well, we know what the Inglewood WrestleMania was only through Polestar for the gate.
Right.
So moving on, we have here TKO Group announced in January that the Netflix has Raw rights, which is a 10-year deal for $5 billion, which this article says in parentheses is roughly double the annual value of WWE's current agreement with NBC Universal. Is that accurate?
10-year, $5 billion, roughly double the annual value of WWE's current agreement with NBC
Universal. Is it a 2X increase over their current deal for Raw?
No, that is not.
No, I believe that because the Netflix deal also will supersede a number of international rights in many markets and eventually almost all markets. I believe this basically represents something like a 30%, or if I'm being generous, a 40% increase over the incumbent deals. So it is nearly 2X, $265 million per year, which is the value of Raw's current deal, but it is not only overtaking the U.S. Raw rights. It is overtaking the U.S. Raw rights and Canada, UK, Ireland, Latin America, and eventually everything, including India, which is their number two market. I did fact check these ratings notes that they have here that yes, SmackDown is up 2%, Raw is up 7%, NXT is up 7%. I think the SmackDown number is actually a little low, but the deltas are correct. Doesn't say where this information came from, but I suppose it ultimately came from Nielsen. If it's Nielsen, you don't have to source it. Las Vegas, it does say that. So this is maybe new information. Read through the tea leaves here. The Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority in May, which, by the way, they gave me another update. It's going to be another few weeks before they give me another letter where it says it's going to be another 3 weeks before they respond to my records request. Anyway, the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, basically a tourism board, in May signed a $5 million sponsorship agreement with WWE to host WrestleMania 41, which is more specific language than we got from the 8 News Now report, which is a local Las Vegas outlet, which said that $5 million was approved for something maybe involving WrestleMania. But this is referring to an actual sponsorship agreement. So maybe WWE told SBJ that they actually have an agreement that is for $5 million. I don't know. And you compare that.
And would also, by their own description, mean that Indianapolis is spending more than $5 million. Well, I mean, if your figures are accurate, it would exceed $9 million, really, for the WrestleMania in Dallas.
Well, what's a site fee? Is a site fee just the cash that's transacted, or does that include incentives? I think there's some semantics there. We have a big list of all the geographies that WrestleMania has been in, which are not sourced. Maybe you don't want to reference Cage Match or something like that, as well as Royal Rumble, as well as SummerSlam. There's a quote here from Motley, who is the commissioner of the Las Vegas organization. We assume that an average length stay is around 4 nights per visitor and a gain of $144,000 in incremental room nights, which does make sense because if you, as I noted here, if you take $144 and you divide it by, they're expecting the average stay to be 4 nights, and you figure, you know, that's about 36,000 reservations, I suppose you could say. And so if you figure on average, there's 2 people to a room. Okay, that makes sense. More than 100,000 fans will attend the WWE Ohio events this summer. So I think that's referring just to SummerSlam. 100,000 fans are going to attend SummerSlam. It's one event, right? Are there going to be...
It's one night. And yeah. I don't know how they get to 100,000. I also don't want to gloss over the fact above that headline. WrestleMania is not the only rainmaker for host cities.
So shots
just because the rainmaker has signed elsewhere doesn't mean that we cannot create our own. Yeah, I mean, 100,000 fans. I mean, I'm guessing that they are taking the highest amount. I'm trying to do their accounting in their head, but they are somehow incorporating the SmackDown event, the SummerSlam event, any kind of the people through their shop. Like they're just saying to attend WWE events in Ohio this summer. So I don't know what all this goes beyond just SummerSlam. I'm sure they're counting every single person that encounters a WWE logo that week in some form or fashion.
Yeah. So it's they are doing SmackDown there. They are doing Now and Forever on Friday. What is Now or? Oh, that's GCW, Now and Forever. Which,
well, they might count those. So that's another like.
Which currently has 262 tickets distributed, as of last count from WrestleTix. Anyway, okay, we'll move on to the attendances here that they list for other events that have already happened in Ohio this year, because it mentions this $1.68 million in tax credits that WWE will receive from. The motion picture credit tax program. We knew about this before through a press release from a government organization in Ohio. So that's not new news, but that is true. So it lists, here's the attendance and here's all the exposure, basically what they're saying. Here's all the exposure that these local municipalities and the, you know, these tourism boards are benefiting from, because there are these like exterior shots of the arena, and maybe they highlight some of their landmarks or something like that. So we're bringing people. There are also people attending, and there's also people, you know, 1.5, 1.6 million people watching. Okay. These viewership numbers are accurate. These attendance numbers, where do they get these attendance numbers from? 9,385 for the Columbus, Ohio event that happened on April 22nd and 6,878 in Toledo on June 10th.
These are WrestleTix numbers.
These now there's no citing the source. So I think this comes directly from Sports Business Journal, doesn't it? 9,385 is the final count for
these that. Are WrestleTix like on the dot numbers.
This is a WrestleTix number, and what was the Toledo number? The Toledo number 6,878 is exactly maybe they did their own ticket mapping estimates and just came to the exact same number.
It could have
that happened.
I mean, maybe they had people in the building that did a finger count and came to that conclusion.
Okay. And here we do have something that is new information to me. I think is genuinely new information. The Greater Cleveland Sports Commission and these all have such long names. The Greater Cleveland Sports Commission and Destination Cleveland. Oh, those are two big organizations. They combined to pitch a low six-figure sum to help secure the event that they're referring to SummerSlam this year and its accompanying SmackDown. So that sounds okay. There's a low six-figure, something over $100,000. In a site fee, not to mention the incentives that they're getting here. So it's all a little more complicated than it would sound like on its surface about evaluating what the value is of a site fee, because there's these tax credit programs that they apply for in a number of years. So anyway, a low six-figure site fee for SummerSlam as well as the SmackDown. There are I don't know if this is fair. You can tell me if this is not fair. There are some choice adjectives like huge boost that really put this over the top into being, a really great article that promotes WWE. Tropicana feel it does mention the $500,000 contribution from the tourism board Visit St. Pete Clearwater for Tampa's. So that is mentioned. Without reference to where that's from. And here's some other new information, though, that the Houston Royal Rumble in 2020, just before the pandemic, that received, what does it actually say? Additionally, the Harris County Houston Sports Authority received $323,000 from their program for hosting the 2020 Royal Rumble at Minute Maid Park. So another site fee, apparently. $323,000. Getting an idea of what the actual cash is that's being transacted here. There could be millions in incentives, though, that are transacted. It mentions this $5.2 million figure for WrestleMania in 2022, and it's referencing data from the Texas Economic Development and Tourism Office that indicate the Dallas Sports Commission, on behalf of the cities of Dallas and Arlington, received $5.2 million. I see it right here. In the document that I think they're referencing as being almost $9 million. So maybe I'm confused, though, because they seem to have highlighted things in a more positive light rather than a more negative light. So there's that. Anything missing from this article?
Well, I had a follow-up question for you in terms of reading this article. At any point, did you read this and think to yourself, wait a minute, WWE is a private company with commercial and competitive interests to protect and should not be punished and exposed for bringing its business to municipal facilities in Texas. And some of this could contain highly intimate or embarrassing facts. Did you find any highly intimate or embarrassing facts? Because I feel there would be a different response if you had reported all of this.
Oh, I don't know. I mean,
Is this not just a complete opposite of the case that's going on in Texas that is trying to withhold this information, but when utilized to sell yourself, then all of this information is a benefit to WWE and they are speaking on the record and confirming numbers. And now they are public numbers.
Yeah. I mean, there's the things I highlighted in blue here are new information to me. But most of this was already public. And it's being presented in a way that is really glowing and is really, it is from a WWE perspective, I would say, in terms of this is great stuff for your local municipality. And we're talking to people who work on tourism boards and sports commission boards who are, you know, totally in agreement that this is great for local business, which I don't doubt. I don't think I've ever, you know, written anything or said anything to cast doubt on the notion that, you know, when you're attracting incremental stays at hotel rooms, especially given, I mean, what they mentioned right here, the lodging tax revenue that I think just about every state has, that's going to drive a lot of incremental revenue, particularly if you put it on weekends where you'd have fairly weak business anyway. So it's, I don't think there's anything negative to say about whether this money is whether these government funds are not worth it. As I said before, my point is more about we should governments, you know, these numbers should be disclosed because people ought to know what their tax dollars are being spent on so they can evaluate whether that's the best way to spend their money and whether that money should be spent on something else in the alternative. No mention here is what I'm getting at about the San Antonio Royal Rumble fee. No mention about the lawsuit that WB has filed against the Texas Attorney General to suppress this information. That's not here. Despite, I mean, there's pretty thorough.
That's my big takeaway here. Is if I was Ken Paxton and I read this article and WWE participated in it, I'd be like this: you have no argument against the disclosure. All you want is that you want to disclose this information on your terms, but a reporter is somehow not allowed to disclose this. Which Sports Business Journal did do reporting on this on top of it, and they didn't seem to have any issue with it or are trying to suppress any of this information. So it seems like you're trying to argue from both ends of the spectrum. You want to benefit and trumpet these fees that you are getting, while at the other end wanting to suppress when they're not coming out on your timetable.
I imagine that there were very specific issues maybe around their negotiations, maybe with Indiana or other municipalities, that made it really advantageous for them to delay and obfuscate the release of information that would have revealed certain details about the San Antonio, agreement. So they kept that from being released. Still hasn't been released. They've since made deals with at least Indiana. They made the deal for Las Vegas, WrestleMania, and maybe it benefited them. It was worth the, who knows, tens of thousands of dollars that they maybe paid a law firm to work for them. Probably paid off in terms of getting a little bit incremental, getting that and then some in terms of an incremental value of a deal with the sports commissions or the tourism boards that they were negotiating with.
Another story from the past week that might be worth interesting, whether it's a one-off or not. But of course, Dana White, his big project is running this UFC 306 card from the Sphere in Las Vegas in September. And they have, this is the first time they have ever done this. They have they've rebranded like the naming rights. It is now Riyadh Season. Noche UFC is how it is being promoted. And no doubt they are getting a ton of money for this in terms of just giving up the naming rights. And I mean, there's another avenue. I don't know how many people necessarily would be making it worth their while for something, but this is a super expensive event for UFC to be staging. And I mean, they're getting a huge influx with Riyadh Season presenting this event that's taking place in Las Vegas in September.
In terms of marketing value, I mean, we're looking at a picture here in video of the Sphere literally saying, has the Riyadh Season branding on it. And, you know, I think we've been thinking about, you know, what great marketing value the Sphere is. It's this giant ball that's sitting in the middle of Las Vegas, and it's seen by God knows how many people every day. So that's just another value that UFC is helping the Saudi government bring to itself. But I really want to, you know, I don't know, hit this on over the head with a hammer again. Like the criticism that wrestling media receives is justified. The criticism that sports media and the entertainment media and the broader mainstream media doesn't get when it comes to wrestling coverage should get, you know, all that scrutiny and more, because they have so much more power. Brands and sponsors actually care what Sports Business Journal, what The Athletic, what Sports Illustrated, what ESPN, what Variety, what The Hollywood Reporter. They actually care what those outlets write. Do they care what WrestleNomics, Post Wrestling, and Fightful and PW Insider, do they care what they report? Not as much. What those mainstream outlets, especially those that are geared towards business partners like Sports Business Journal, what they do actually matters a lot more than what we do, unfortunately.
It's the Snickers doctrine. And those media outlets are the ones that, I mean, they're not at the level of sponsors, but they're not that far off either. And these are the outlets. Like, and I remember
what the difference is, why those outlets don't get the criticism that wrestling media justly does, is because there aren't personalities associated with those mainstream outlets that irritate people, because they're just not familiar with those outlets or the people behind them.
Yeah, I think there's an overall exemption that a lot get as well, that these are people that are not covering the industry as in depth, and therefore I think a lot is either forgiven or just a lot is not expected of them. But they are the ones that carry a whole lot more weight, and when they are not challenging those issues or ignoring them, that has great impact in terms of the overall coverage and how it is swayed. And we've definitely seen that throughout this year in terms of, like, I was just listening to this discussion about it. Like, there's a difference between talking about something and a difference in pushing something. And it's like, can we check off a box that we covered the Janelle Grant case? Yes, we put up our requisite story. It's there. We can, and without a byline, maybe. And then there's actually like pushing something and doing like additional coverage on it, follow up, as opposed to just doing like the bare minimum. And we did see outlets do the bare minimum this year when it came to that case. That I, like, now that we are semi removed and can just look at this, like, here is, without question, if you were to ask 100 people who is the most powerful person in the history of wrestling, 100 people are coming back to you and saying Vince McMahon. Like, it is not in dispute. And extrapolate that to any other entertainment entity, sports entity, and here he is, resigns for the second time in total disgrace with a lawsuit that is just riddled with the most harrowing of details. And this company, it completely pivoted past this person. There was, like, how big of a story was the Vince McMahon story beyond wrestling coverage, beyond that week or so that existed? And I don't think it's commensurate with the level of celebrity that came with Vince McMahon, with the level of power and influence. And for some reason, it was not the story that I think the weight of it commanded.
Yeah, I remember a little over a year ago when we had Alex Sherman on, I kind of tried to broach that and asked him why this wasn't getting wider coverage. And part of his response was that, well, when you look at, you know, Vince McMahon, it's sort of like a Donald Trump effect, in that it's not a surprise to anybody that there would be sexual misconduct allegations against Vince McMahon. And he controlled, this is pre-second resignation at this time, and he controlled the company. He had 80% of the shares. So there wasn't as much scrutiny against Vince. I take it was my takeaway of what his response was to us about why there wasn't more mainstream coverage and scrutiny around the culture of WWE and Vince's conduct and people around him.
Well, it's, I just feel as though, as you know, you present this argument about the outlets that that carry the most amount of weight to the public, to these companies, that they are also the ones that have, I think, generally, I don't want to like label everybody, but a more dismissive view of this industry, that when there's something big, we have an obligation to do the bare minimum. We have covered it. But we are not diving into this to the degree we would if this were a figure in Hollywood, if this were a general manager in sports, if this were a league commissioner, that this would be around the clock news. I mean, look at some of the stories that come out in these various industries and how big they are. And here we are, and it's 6 months removed. And this applies to both. Like, I'm not stating they're on the same level, but Dana White did not have any repercussions after the incident with his wife last year, and then it just expound that all into like Vince McMahon has certainly, I think, taken great reputational harm. But WWE did not. And it's not like Vince McMahon, I feel, was like raked under the coals from a mainstream perspective. I would be very curious, like what the general view was of Vince McMahon, how many people were aware of this story that has just moved on. And there was very little follow-up coverage of things that progressed in the suit, other details that came out. And unless there's like some major trial, like, I don't know if that's even going to garner the attention again.
Yeah. And, I strongly agree that this is that the Grant lawsuit and the seven known allegations of sexual misconduct against Vince are, they're looked at as by the public as things that are isolated to Vince McMahon and I guess John Laurinaitis, who are both gone from the company, which is true. But there's, you know, there's four corporate officers, one of whom is still with the WWE. And you know, we know that there were, you know, multiple mainstream outlets that knew, you know, who they were, but it took us to report on that for some reason.
Well, this brings an end to this week's edition of Pollock and Thurston, where we got a great dissertation of this article by Brandon Thurston. Thank you to Adobe Acrobat for its its contributions to the show. Also want to thank Josh Nason for jumping on with us. And we will look to reschedule Matt Camp once he is doing a bit better. He was severely under the weather. He caught a bad bout of food poisoning. There's never a good bout of food poisoning, but this was a bad bout of it from my understanding of things. Tonight, Wei Ting and I will be live moments after Dynamite from Chicago, so you can tune in here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. We also have a brand new month at postwrestlingcafe.com. This month, we're going to be kicking off our G1 coverage, and we've got a review of WrestleMania 9 coming out on Friday from Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas, Nevada, the world's largest toga party.
You know who special guest usher was for that, don't you?
That was one Nick Khan, his first WrestleMania that he worked. Yeah. That he was there as an usher at Caesar's Palace. I'm surprised. As good as WWE's production is of like isolating and finding people from years gone by video, we've never seen that spotlight and someone locating Nick Khan in '93. I don't think we even know Nick Khan's age. There's so many. I've seen like varying numbers.
SEC filings. Yeah, his age is published. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Brandon on top
of
things.
He's in his 40s somewhere, mid-late 40s. Yeah.
He's got to be older than that, isn't he? This WrestleMania 9 was 31 years ago.
Okay.
I guess it's possible. I mean, he could have been a teenager, I guess, working as an usher.
Yeah, we'll have to do that math offline. He's late 40s, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if Nick Khan wants to come on and talk about WrestleMania 9, you're more than the door is always open. All right, that's it for us. Brandon, you have a free show coming up this week.
Yes. Yes. It's my plan is to look at the first half of 2024 in business, compare all the business metrics that we can now compare attendance of the first half of this year to last year for WWE and AEW and things like that. It'll be free for everyone to take in unless there's some bigger news story that breaks.
Okay. Are we going to get some graphs? Are we going to have some graphs that are going to be aggregated and taken out of context and used as tools for people with agendas out there?
Probably. They always are.
Yes. Well, I encourage everyone to go on over, support WrestleNomics, go to patreon.com/WrestleNomics, where you can also see Brandon's estimated merchandise figures.
Yes.
Estimated to the best of Brandon's ability. Estimates. So those are out there for everyone to check out. All right. Thanks again to Josh Nason and all of you for tuning in. We will be back same time, same place next Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Dickie Bird here from Chopped Tees. Our summer super sale is now on. Grab up to 25% off selected tees and hats from Post Wrestling, WrestleNomics, The Lapsed Fan, Poison Rana, and more. Shipping is free and fast almost everywhere in the world. Just go to chopped-tees.com and grab a deal before the sale ends at midnight, July 7th.